How do campaigns know what issues resonate with the public? How do researchers learn about social and political beliefs? Often, that work is done through surveys or polling. Alaska doesn't have as much polling data as many other states, but there are pollsters here, and we'll hear about how the work is conducted and how it's used today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. When you get invited to participate in a survey or poll, do you take part? Okay, I admit I'm not a good citizen when it comes to taking part in polls. I blame my day job. A reporter shouldn't sign petitions or weigh in on things that could influence public opinion. But I also realize understanding public sentiment about various political, cultural, and social issues is important for campaigns, businesses, and developing good policy. So how do researchers who develop polls figure out who to engage with and how to reach them? How much does the way you ask or frame a question affect the kind of answers you get? And how do the folks who commission polls or work with existing ones use them to advance their work? We're fortunate in the lead up to the next election to have guests on today that can answer those questions. In the studio is Ivan Moore. Ivan is the owner of Alaska Survey Research. Also in the studio today is Jason Katz-Brown. Jason is a senior analyst with Data for Progress. And in the studio is Matt Shukaro. Matt is the founder of Fathom Strategic Communications. Matt's also worked on political campaigns. Thanks all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
Great to have guests in the studio. You can also join us. Have you wondered about how polls are created, who pays for them, and what they're used for? Do you think polls are important and people should engage to get a more accurate reflection of beliefs? You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Ivan, I'm going to start with you, because you've been here longest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, actually, you've been here your whole life, Matt, but Ivan's been in business for a long time. For nearly 30 years, you've been doing this work. How has the business and how you approach it changed in that three decades?
Well, fundamentally, it hasn't changed at all. Your job is to find people randomly in the population that you're looking at studying and ask them questions, and that's it. The two things that have changed in the last 30 years while I've been doing this is, first, the shift from landlines to cell phones, which was complicated and something we had to deal with when people started dumping their landlines. Back in the old days, it was easy. And then the second shift that has happened, that we've made, at least, not everyone has made it yet, is moving away from the telephone as the means of contact and towards online administration of surveys.
Well, that sort of, I guess, answers my next question regarding if it's gotten easier or harder to connect with people who are hyper-connected 24/7, but can also see who's trying to reach them more easily than in the past with landlines.
Yeah. Seeing who you can reach, I was just thinking, actually, way back in my career, I did work for ATU. In your introduction, you made it sound, and it's not your fault, it's a very common perception, that all of this polling work revolves around politics. It doesn't revolve around politics. Everything in our lives gets researched first. And the thing that I thought back to was doing work for ATU, better part of 30 years ago, where they were asking in a survey describing this futuristic service that they had called Caller ID, and would their customers be interested in paying a little bit extra to have the ability to see the telephone number of the people that were calling them? And people did like it, and here we are 30 years later, and we don't get any call that doesn't have that, or at least we don't answer them, right?
Yeah, that's the usually what happens for me. Thank you, Ivan, for getting us started. Jason, Data for Progress started in 2018, correct? But you started collecting data in Alaska in 2020.
Yep.
What was the mission, or why did the organization form the mission, and why do you have an analyst here in Alaska yourself?
Yeah, Data for Progress is a progressive think tank and polling firm. We've been fielding surveys in Alaska since 2020, as you said, but we do work around the country and we live around the country. So I moved to Anchorage a little more than 2 years ago. And conducting polling here and doing research here has been a really fascinating lens into not only living here and learning about the state, but just doing polling kind of gives an insight into the, I don't know, Alaskan voters are pretty amazing. Like, through our research, we've seen that like the median Alaskan voter holds a lot of dichotomies that I think from the outside, lower 40 people would think are contradictory. But living here, you see Alaskan voters are very pragmatic. For example, I think we've seen that the median Alaskan voter strongly supports oil development and also strongly wants to protect their communities from the effects of climate change. The median Alaskan voter is a big fan of Donald Trump and holds a lot of policy views that would be seen as progressive in a lot of the country, like wanting to expand government subsidies for childcare, being against the Fred Meyer's Cars merger, and being pro-union. So it's been fascinating just to learn about the state by doing polling here.
Yeah, Alaskans are different, no question about it. Jason, you're sort of owning this. Many conservative Alaskans would hear the name Data for Progress and think liberals. Does that matter to you for your work if you're labeled that way?
Yeah, there's a few ways to answer that question. One is a pollster is only, our goal is to show that there's many policies, whether you call them progressive or not, that have broad bipartisan support. Like I mentioned, expanding child care subsidies, we found that I think 70%, more than two-thirds of voters told us they would like to support the bill going through the legislature right now to expand government subsidies for child care in Alaska. And a pollster is only going to be trusted to put out the results, and those results are only going to be listened to as much as that pollster has a track record of putting out unbiased and accurate results. So the pollster ratings organization 538 has put us in the top 10% of pollsters overall, with the fourth highest rating for like accuracy and lack of bias. But overall, I think I would encourage everybody when they see a new poll, especially from a pollster they don't recognize, to look and evaluate for themselves whether they think that that poll aligns with their intuitions, and to look for benchmarks that will give them more trust in that poll. Mm. So we put out this year a poll I've referred to about a whole different set of policy topics in Alaska. And we also included, when we published those, some benchmarks people can refer back to compare to historical results and to their intuition. So we showed that that same set of voters who was strongly supporting expanding childcare access also is going to vote for Donald Trump by double-digit margins in 2024 and strongly finds Joe Biden unpopular. And I think that will align with past results and aligns with Alaskan intuitions of where the state is and helps them give trust to those numbers that all of those came from the same sample of voters in the same survey.
Interesting. Thank you. Ivan, in an earlier interview, you said that it really bugs you that you've been labeled as a Democrat, as a Democratic polling firm. But you also said that it kind of comes fairly. What did you mean by that?
It's not necessarily, you know, sometimes polling firms or political consultants choose which side they want to work on that aligns with perhaps their personal views. I was never that way. I started off working for Republicans, then I started working for a few Democrats, and then the Republicans got annoyed. Normally, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy that once you start working on one side, the other side sees you as the enemy and they don't hire you anymore. And so, like, the position of equilibrium, whether you're a pollster or a political consultant, is to gravitate to one side or the other. And it's very difficult to walk the knife edge and work for both sides and have people trust you. So that's the dynamic. I spent most of my career aligned with Democrats, aligned in terms of my relationships and probably the majority of the work that I did. But that doesn't mean you're a Democrat polling firm.
Sure.
I always kind of insisted on my independence and insisted, particularly to press people, that they not call me a Democrat pollster because I didn't see myself as one. So it's a distinction.
And you also said that actually political polling is only about 20% of your work, correct?
Yeah.
So what is the majority of what you're polling about?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. I mean, we do a huge amount of work for the State Department of Health on chronic disease and smoking and things like that related to health. Companies will hire you to find out how well they're known. Companies like ATU always want to have products tested. That doesn't happen quite as much, but it does. Every quarter, we do a study of what people think about the economy in Alaska and in Anchorage. It runs the gamut. Everyone does it, because that's the thing. You pick up any product, anything around you, look at anything. My sunglasses, someone did market research on these sunglasses at some point before they were manufactured. People just don't invest in doing anything that costs money without doing their due diligence research-wise first.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you. If you're just joining us today, we're talking with two people who conduct polls on a wide range of issues and someone who also is in communications work and uses polls. Ivan Moore is the owner of Alaska Survey Research. Matt Shukaro is the owner of Fathom Strategic Communications. And Jason Katz-Brown is a senior analyst for Data for Progress. We're talking about polls and what they're used for, how they're conducted. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. Matt, thank you for your patience.
Yeah, no worries.
I want to get to you now. Before we talk about your campaign experience in polls, tell us about Fathom Strategic Communications and how you use polls and surveys to help clients clarify future priorities.
Sure. You know, my firm is a consulting campaign communications, but also we do a lot of public affairs work. So we work with clients that work in industry spaces like energy, infrastructure, healthcare, a variety of areas, fisheries, other areas as well. And so we often take data like Ivan's talking about and look at that and examine it and apply it to the work that we do. You know, these sort of surveys and this data analysis can be very informative. Sometimes for public elected officials and public policy, it's great affirmation that what's being done is headed in the right direction. That it, you know, sometimes when in the polling world, these are sort of tracking polls that, hey, this is what you're doing, the policies that you're taking is headed in the right direction. We use a great example with our federal delegation and their work on the federal infrastructure bill. You know, the United Congressional Delegation voted for that legislation. It was their decision. There wasn't a ton of information out in polling and tracking ahead of time. But afterwards, there were a variety of folks in state and out of state that wanted to say, hey, is this aligning with the vision of Alaskans? Is it tracking with what they want to see be done by their elected officials? And what the information said is that a majority of Alaskans are happy to see new investment on renewable energy or clean water and sewer or to basic infrastructure projects like roads and bridges. And I think that's very informative for elected officials, for them to know that, hey, what we're doing, we are heading in the wrong direction. Also, in the same way, it can be used as a tool to say, hey, we don't think that some of your supporters may agree with this particular line or this particular issue. And it helps you really sort of define messaging, define direction, and help you ultimately look if you're heading in the right direction. From a candidate space, obviously, I have a lot of experience with campaigns, have run a statewide campaign in 2020 with Senator Sullivan.
Right, his reelection campaign.
Yeah, and also worked on the Constitutional Convention,
yes,
which was defeated 70-30. I was on the 70 side. You know, it is very helpful, as Ivan mentioned and others,
When you're laying down a big expenditure, if you're putting up millions of dollars in digital or radio or television, you want to make sure that your message is accurate. And it also resonates with people, and that the top line messages that you're hoping to put in front of people are ultimately working. And it's perhaps the issues that resonate best. And so it's confirming what you think you know, particularly from someone who has worked on polls and had them issued and ultimately develop and paid for polls. That's some of the things we're looking for when we're examining polls.
I see by email, I want our listeners to know that we did invite Matt Larkin, who is now the owner of Dittman Research. It used to be Dave Dittman that owned that polling company, and now Matt Larkin does. Matt couldn't be here today, and this may be why. Here's a release from Governor Dunleavy, who says, Governor Dunleavy to release statewide opinion poll on education reform. So today at 1 o'clock, the governor will release the findings of a new statewide public opinion poll on education reform. Joining him will be Matt Larkin, owner of Dittman Research. So that's why Matt's not here
and
with us today.
I'm sure I think we're going to probably see today that, and I know Data for Progress released an education poll just, maybe a month ago or so when I was looking at it. But I imagine that they may both be pointing to different things in their polls and pointing to here's why. Perhaps the governor has taken the approach he's taking. Maybe it's some confirmation of the direction he's headed. And I know that your poll, as it was described, is saying a majority of Alaskans support an increase to the BSA. So it is very fascinating what someone can read in a poll. I mean, I read your poll as well. And my takeaway is you can extrapolate perhaps what you want, that there's a 15% of people perhaps are undecided and don't know where they want to go. So there's so many layers to this. And so this is a very fruitful conversation.
Well, I'm somewhat assuming that the results must be something the governor appreciates, or they wouldn't release a poll, right? I mean, how often are polls not released at all if the results are not what the person was hoping for?
Yeah, I was just thinking, people accuse pollsters of fudging numbers and being dishonest. Listen, I can tell you that no self-respecting, respectable pollster anywhere has ever fudged or made anything up. However, when you're in a situation like Matt is in right now, and I know Matt and I like Matt and I have a lot of respect for him, so don't get me wrong.
This is the other Matt Larkin, right?
Yeah. Yes.
What about this Matt?
Working for Dunleavy, obviously you're doing a survey on education. I suspect, although I don't know this for a fact, that they probably didn't ask the question, do you favor or oppose raising the BSA, the base student allocation, to a higher level? They're not going to ask questions that don't show them in a good light, right? Why open that Pandora's box? And if they do ask those questions, what ultimately gets released to the media might not include those. Now, of course, I don't know whether Dunleavy has done the survey on behalf of his office, in which case the data and the report would become public because it's public money, or whether he's done it as part of his campaign, in which case he can release whatever bits of it he chooses to release and keep the rest under wraps. So there is that kind of fudging that goes on, because obviously Dunleavy doesn't want to release anything that doesn't make his side look good.
So that's
the problem with political polling, because it's always got an agenda to it.
Which I think people understand and probably accept that there is going to be some of that. But to be clear, what you're saying is, reputable, ethical pollsters never change any of the numbers, but the person who paid for the poll might say, yeah, we're not releasing that part of it.
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I wanted to ask about, of the two pollsters here, a Brookings Institute article on polls from 2003 noted that they had polled people about what they think of polls. And it likely wouldn't be favorable. But if you polled people about whether elected officials, journalists, business leaders should listen to citizens, the results greatly improve. So 20 years later, what have you observed about how the sentiment has changed regarding polls? Or is it more, have you sort of better dialed in how to ask people questions so that, you know, there isn't that automatic rejection of it?
I always tell people that doing polls is a really, really effective way of having an impact on public policy, much more even than voting. Because if you happen to be doing a poll for, say, some department of state government, they are listening, and you're one of 500 or 700 people who are participating in that poll, and you can have a say that is listened to. Just as an example, I was talking yesterday about a focus group that I did about 20 years ago. A focus group obviously isn't a poll, but it's the same kind of thing. You're asking people questions just in a qualitative setting as opposed to a quantitative one. And it concerned obesity, and it was being done for the state of Alaska Department of Health. And the focus group was in Bethel. And there was a participant in the focus group who didn't really say very much during the group. And we're talking about what do you do with your kids in terms of getting them to exercise and go outside and blah, blah, blah. He didn't really talk all the way through. And then we're basically wrapping up the focus group at the end of the thing. And we said, what would you leave us with as a message? And he said, well, you know, you just got to get outside and play every day. And I went, ooh, it was one of those kind of gotcha moments. And that became the Play Every Day campaign for the Department of Health at the state of Alaska. And it was created by that one person who probably didn't have any idea that he did it, but he did it.
He captured it all succinctly in a few words.
He caught that lightning in the bottle, and his words led to actions that saved lives.
Hmm. Well, that's an amazing example. Thank you. Jason, tough act to follow there.
Yeah.
Your thoughts about how things have changed in 20 years.
I mean, Alaska has very little publicly released polling for some of the reasons that we just talked about. And that's kind of one of my motivations for working on our poll earlier this year. At the beginning of the year, I saw that the major priority of the state legislature was education funding and other education initiatives. And that was in the news every day, like talking about the BSA and all the legislative negotiations. But there was I couldn't find any public polling about it. And it made, I wanted to know, like, I've heard a lot from the governor, I've heard a lot from state legislators. What do Alaskans think the BSA increase should be? Or should there be none? Or should there be other focuses on education? And that was the original motivation for us working on our poll and why we wanted to make it public. We wanted to have public information out there to raise the awareness and educate not only all Alaskans, also the policymakers and lawmakers. And yeah, indeed, we found that the majority of Alaskans support a BSA increase of $680 or more. And you can, it also provides useful breakdowns. For example, we saw that only in the MATSU is there's support for, well, only the MATSU does not support a BSA increase like that. And
I think you can say that about the MATSU on a lot of issues.
Yeah, they yes.
And it kind of stands out.
I'm really excited to hear that the government's having a press release and a press event today and releasing more polling about that, because in general, more public polling is helpful for everybody for a few reasons. One is even just technologically, methodologically, the more public polling data is out there, the more pollsters can cross-reference with each other and compare notes and improve our techniques that will make all of our polls more accurate and all of our understandings better. And not only that, but more polling data out there also helps, lets us compare where our elected officials are, where our government is, to where Alaskans stand. Because ideally, everybody is representing their constituents, but it can be hard to know where your constituents stand on a topic. One example of misalignment we found in our latest poll was around like fish and game management. So we found that the vast majority of Alaskans, I think more than 70%, support a rural subsistence priority when salmon are scarce in a river. But we've seen that the state is taking the opposite stance and fighting a rural priority. So there's a misalignment there. We also saw that we found that the vast majority of Alaskans want a federal ban on trawling. Alaskans generally don't seem to like trawling. And again, the state is taking a really different stance there. All the governor's appointees to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council have been pro-trawling. So just the poll helps us see like where there's some disconnects.
But would you say the vast majority of Alaskans, how many people were involved in that poll? Certainly not all Alaskans.
Yeah, this poll was more than 1,100 people. And yeah, we take great pains to make our polls a representative sample. So one way to validate that is that like we found that 70% of Alaskan voters think that fishing should be limited to rural residents when salmon are scarce. And that's the same voters that are going to vote for Donald Trump by 12 points in 2024. So we found that this is not a partisan issue, not a rural versus urban issue, that's really across the board.
And even
voters in the Matsu fund, we found voted a double-digit margin think that there should be a rural subsistence priority when salmon are scarce.
Matt, I want to turn to you. We've been talking about polls being much broader than politics, but of course, campaigns use polls a lot.
Sure.
Give us an example of what you were looking at in the 2020 re-election campaign for Senator Dan Sullivan. He was up against Al Gross, who hadn't held office before. What kind of polling were you most interested in, and how did it help?
Yeah, you know, just even taking a step back just from our own race, you know, generally speaking, a big campaign, you know, you would begin your cycle, your election cycle, with probably a big poll that is sort of all-encompassing, that talks about sort of a check-in on where you are, what's your favorability. You know, you may test the question of other candidates. You see that where people throw out names where you're like, I didn't know they were running, and because they aren't, but people look at other candidates who may enter the race. They look at popularity of current elected officials. But there's also an opportunity to begin testing themes, ideas, messages, and, you know, trying to figure out what direction are you wanting to take this campaign. You know, our campaign in 2020 was really this idea of a vision and record and sort of promises made, promises delivered. And so we wanted to say, what do people want to hear? And it's very fascinating to be able to look at, you know, we found in a number of our polling that people really like the concept of an icebreaker. And why is that? You know, we can see it in the crosstabs. It, you know, it was just delivered that the delegation secured this commercially available icebreaker. But in polling, people really like this concept, that it really resonated with them. It's probably because we hear it a lot, but those sort of things, you know, things like federal investments to infrastructure or to the military or delivering on some of these things that Congressman John Young and Ted Stevens have delivered on for a long time. And so a lot of that is sort of the foundation of maybe where some of your messages are going, sort of the foundation of some of your campaign and building a theme. You know, from there, it's very fascinating because that's just the beginning. We really go and are doing continuous check-ins to see where you are. You do sort of a tracking poll that maybe every quarter or every, you know, twice a year, maybe when you're not in cycle. And then really when it comes down to it, you're possibly pulling a brief poll, maybe a 10-question poll, once every 2 weeks, once every week. Why? I think in part is, you know, at that point in time, you're wanting to see if things that you're doing in the campaign are moving things. You know, if you put in a big radio buy or television buy, is that moving the conversation? If an outside group comes in and floods the market with a bunch of money attacking one another, which we faced, that also is something you want to track. And if a big popular event happens, you know, hey, where things are. So we did a lot of this tracking poll as well. So we were able to see, interestingly, you talked about releasing polls. I've been part of dozens and dozens of polls that we've never released. Mm-hmm. And our polling was very accurate. We knew sort of a very steady hand that what we were seeing internally was not necessarily what folks were putting out externally. And to the listeners at home, you know, when I look at a poll, I always ask, why is it being released? Who authored it? Who paid for it? And then, are they releasing sort of the transparency data? How many people? How is it conducted? And the more they release, to be honest, the more transparent they are. If you can really look deep into their poll, it's super helpful to be informed on what information you're looking at. And there is, you know, there is some some ability to be biased in how, when you ask a question, how it's asked,
sure,
how the question's posed,
yeah,
how it's framed. And, you know, there's also issue polling that we saw, for example, groups focused on reforming healthcare, but we're asking a series of healthcare questions with a candidate question at the end. Well, that also can kind of, it's kind of the concept of a push poll.
We'll get more into what crosstabs are and some of that, you know, what methods are used for this type of work after we take a break. And just to let our listeners know, you're listening to Talk of Alaska. Today, we're talking about polling and how polls are used in a wide variety of settings. We have Ivan Moore, owner of Alaska Survey Research, Matt Shukaro, the owner of Fathom Strategic Communications, and Jason Katz-Brown, a senior analyst with Data for Progress, in the studio with us today. We will continue our conversation as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing polling today in the lead up to the election season, and we have two pollsters in the studio with us and also a communications expert who has used polls in a variety of settings. Ivan Moore is the owner of Alaska Survey Research. Jason Katz-Brown is a senior analyst with Data for Progress. And Matt Shukaro is the owner of Fathom Strategic Communications, and Matt has also worked for, most of the former congressional delegation. You worked for the late Congressman Don Young. You've worked for Senator Stevens and Senator Murkowski.
Yeah, and Senator Sullivan, yeah.
Yeah. You can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255 if you have questions about polls, how they're done, if you like to answer the questions and wait for results. 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Martin is in Fairbanks. Hello, Martin.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that and have your reaction to the, you know, opinion polls aren't really scientific studies, so you're not dealing with confidence limits and whatever. But nonetheless, you do care about sample size, you know, saying that, you know, 2,000 people feel this way as opposed to, you know, the three people I asked feel that way makes a big difference. And also, you know, how you gather your information. Do you do it by telephone survey, or people standing on corners or whatever? Because, that greatly influences how people reply. Also, I think the people that just don't want to respond and immediately, you know, turn down any offers of responding to a poll, they're a different population than those that say, sure, I'll answer. So I would just like to have you talk about some of these issues that are involved in polling, especially sample size. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Martin. Excellent question, and kind of queued up what I was going to ask next anyway about, you know, you use online tools now, still have to reach people. So how does that happen? Is it targeted ads, or what are you using to... I mean, you're not using targeted ads to reach people on street corners. That's true, for sure.
Sure. Here's an exercise that Martin can do at home. Oftentimes, polls get done with a sample size of 1,000. 1,000 has, if you pick your 1,000 randomly, you'll have a margin of error of no more than 3% at 95% confidence, which means that 95% of the time, your poll results will come in within 3% of the real figure out there. So imagine you're a Martian who comes in on a spaceship and you don't understand that flipping a coin is a 50-50 deal. And you come down and you think to yourself, well, I wonder what the probability of it being a head or being a tail is. And here's your exercise at home, Martin. I want you to take out a quarter and I want you to flip it 1,000 times and record how many heads you get and how many tails you get. When you've totted that up, then I want you to do that whole exercise 1,000 more times. And what you'll find is that 95% of the time for your 1,000 flip trials, you'll come in between 470 heads, 530 tails, or 470 tails, 530 heads, i.e. within 3% of 50-50, 95% of the time, because that's the statistic. So that's the basis that we're working on. All we need to make sure is that we're picking the 1,000 people randomly, which is a slightly more difficult task than it appears, but it's doable.
And there's a lot more science involved than just coin tossing.
So yeah, it is, yes, but that's scientific, and it's probability and statistics, and that's how it works, you know. And it gets it's something that people do too often, where they say, "Well, you only talk to 500 people. There are 500,000 people in Alaska, right? But there's a million coin flips, and you made an estimate of the 50-50 real probability by just flipping 1,000 times."
Jason.
Yeah, it's also really important to ensure that you've reached a representative sample of Alaskans. So for example, based on historical trends in our modeling of who's voted in previous election and who's registered to vote for the upcoming election, we can make a bunch of expectations about demographics or geographies or past vote choice. So we expect, for example, between like 35 to 40% of likely voters in the upcoming November election to have a college degree. So as we're reaching out to voters via sending them a text message or phone calling them or using an online web panel, we're monitoring who's coming in based on what they tell us when they take our survey, which includes demographic questions like, do you have a college degree? And if we see that too many respondents are coming in with a college degree, we'll change who we're reaching out to and try to reach more people who don't have a college degree to ensure that we have a representative sample. Mm-hmm. And in general, we do see a lot of non-response bias. So basically potential bias based on who's picking up the phone or who's responding to a text. And for example, if you have a college degree, you're more likely to respond to a poll for whatever reason. And that's really important to take into account as you're sampling, as you're waiting, and as you're analyzing results. But it's really important from the beginning to be reaching a representative sample in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And to that point, you know, it is very, for a listener at home, think about this. If you're doing a survey sample, representative sample and geographic sample is very important. I was just working on a poll now, and I reminded folks, I said, hey, make sure that you are properly weighting this poll geographically, right, as well, because an Anchorage voter is not necessarily a Kenai Peninsula voter or a Mat-Su voter or an interior voter or a rural voter. And so that is very important as well. But that is where I think, you know, when we're talking about political polling also doesn't necessarily guarantee what turnout is, and that also has an impact. So, you know, just because someone participates in a survey, you know, there's generally an obligation or a goal to have a likely voter, but that can range sort of widely. We have statistics on how often people vote. I can go into the voter file and say that you have voted one time in the last 10 years.
Oh, and no, I voted a lot more.
No, not you, but a particular voter. Sure. So that's also important. And, you know, when we are doing a 600-person telephone, landline, or cell phone survey, and you're breaking it down geographically, and you're going to the Kenai Peninsula, and of that 400, that population sample might be 55 people, that does get a smaller margin for that area, and that's where you may have an increase of your margin of error. You know, again, margin of error, as Ivan, is a statistical data analysis calculation that you can run at home, that you could probably find a calculator online. So this is, a lot of this is sort of political science and statistical data, but there is a lot more. You know, you see, I found, you know, the pollsters, the reputable pollsters that I have used have always had these fine tuning. When we talk about fine tuning, it's not fine tuning the results, but sometimes it's fine tuning sort of what your sample looks like, the representative sample, the geographic, the age, gender. Those sort of things are very, very important. And again, a survey is not worth a lot unless you have the geographic breakdown that you get at the end of every poll, which is what's your, you know, sometimes you get asked political affiliation. The last time you voted, do you have a college degree? Are you from a labor household? Your ethnicity, those sort of things are super helpful, particularly as you break down the poll and you segment it out to study what it's actually telling you.
And I do want to get to an explanation to help our listeners understand what weighting, what methodology, and what crosstabs, what all that means. But before we get to that part of the discussion, we had by email something that I wanted to ask you about the ethics and the considerations in paying people to participate in polls. This person writes in, paying people for their opinion will help the polling process. 20 years ago, I was performing a policy analysis on Soldotna's banning of smoking in restaurants. The issue had the highest number of public participation at the public meeting. I was aware of exactly how many responses I needed and immediately outside of the Soldotna city limits to make the survey valid. The person says, I offered Tootsie Pops for the three-minute side interview, had middling success until the day they took their six-year-old with them, explained the purpose of the poll, and the six-year-old would say, and you'll get a lollipop, and then opened up the bag for people to see. Then they had 100% response rate with the six-year-old along. Then they go on to say, whoever did the Alaska Youth Survey, Young Person Drug Survey offered a Safeway card for completion. I made sure my kids filled those out to receive the cards. In summary, a person's opinion is worth something. It is also making money for the survey taker. Paying a person for their opinion is warranted. What do the pollsters say about that? Do you think people should be paid for? I mean, we're not talking about hours of time, right, for surveys. It's minutes.
No. You know, back when we did surveys by telephone, which we don't anymore, very often at least, there wasn't any ability to pay people who participated. People participated voluntarily when we called them. We've since moved to an online methodology, and that's freed up a lot of money because telephone fielding, that labor cost is super, super expensive, particularly after we went through COVID and a lot of kind of additional impacts, costs hit the telephone fielding business. And we ran for the hills for online fielding instead, and that freed up budget. And we initially started paying each person who did the survey $5 or $10, like with a gift card. But what we found was that it was logistically difficult. So now we do prizes. Now, the question that the caller asks is the paying of someone going to lead them to tell you what they think you want to hear in the poll? Because you're paying them, is that going to influence the responses they give? I think participation in a prize drawing probably doesn't rise to the point where it'll do that, but it's a good ethical question.
All right, we need to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll get Jason's thoughts on whether people should be paid for participating in polls as Talk of Alaska continues. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about polls and how they're used. You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255. That's statewide, 1-800-478-8255. If you're in Anchorage, the local number is 907-550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So Jason, should people be paid to participate in polls?
As a pollster, we try to experiment as much as possible. So we've used online incentives to encourage our web respondents to respond to our survey. We've even tried, when people respond to our text message, take a poll, we've experimented with having there be a reward at the end. And overall, we aim to, I mentioned we do our polling in Alaska over the phone through texting people a link to a survey or through an online web panel. And we do all of those modes because it's really helpful to be able to compare the results we get through the different ways of contacting people, because there's that bias of who picks up the phone, who responds to text. Every kind of mode you reach people in has a different tendencies of different demographics to respond. Mm-hmm. And that can be really important when, for example, maybe more politically engaged people are responding to a text, but less politically engaged people are responding to your online web panel. And so there's incentivizing with some kind of gift card or reward or prize or money lets you kind of tilt some levers to see how that affects who's going to respond. And then it kind of gets back to, as a pollster, there's a not, you want to be able to link back to a ground truth as much as possible, because there's so much uncertainty there. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think Alaska is unique, is that sometimes there's not as much, it can be tricky to find like certain demographic data. Like one unique part of Alaska is like the Alaska Native vote is an incredibly crucial part of the electorate.
Sure.
And like more than any other U.S. state. And so like that's one way that we'll try to ensure a representative sample to make sure that enough Alaska Native voters are responding to our poll. But there's certain open questions that are kind of still being researched across the state. For example, how much of the vote share in Alaska is from Alaska Native voters is still an open question. And so there's a lot of people doing, and that leads back to the, we've mentioned talking about the voter files and how we use that for a lot of our analysis and strategy work. And a lot of the voter file information about race is simply wrong because it's done by national political data companies with models that just don't work for Alaska. Like, they don't account for the colonial history of missionaries reassigning names that are mostly like Christian and white names and that mess up the race modeling. Mm. So a lot of trying, yeah, we're always trying to find like what is the grand truth of what the demographic breakdown of the electorate is and making sure we're getting those respondents to respond.
Really, really interesting. And that kind of cues up an excellent question that came in by email from Steve in Eagle River. He says, thanks for an important, interesting show. I want to participate in the legitimate types of surveys and polls your guests conduct. When I get a phone call indicating a research entity or a text asking for my opinions, how do I know if it's a legitimate entity? What are the best ways for Alaskans to participate in legitimate surveys and polls? Steve says, I usually don't pick up or respond out of concern it may be someone after personal data for possibly nefarious purposes or just to sell. And so such an excellent question, because I still have a landline. Yes, I'm ancient. I have a landline in addition to my cell phone. And constantly it's because I'm a voter. I constantly get, you know, I'll see the caller ID. I don't pick it up. So how do we... help people understand when it's legitimate and mm-hmm. when it's somebody fishing for mm-hmm. your information?
Sure. Texting is problematic because there is a certain amount of distrust out there, but it's actually very, very easy to tell a legitimate mm-hmm. survey text from one that's not legitimate. We've actually got a video. We actually went to the trouble of producing a video to, like, how to tell if a text is real when we started doing text to online polling. Look for things like this. Number one, if there's any spelling mistakes in it, don't trust it. Number one rule. Number two is if there's contact information in there, if there's a 907 telephone number, if there's an address in Anchorage, if there's an email address, usually in a graphic or in the text of the text, then that certainly heightens its legitimacy. Mm-hmm. If the link that you're clicking on isn't some long alphanumeric bit.ly kind of thing, but is on a domain that you can go and check independently.
So if it said Alaska Survey Research.
All the texts that we put in, it says alaskasurveyresearch.com/survey. And they, if they trust us, and we've got the advantage of being reasonably known, been doing business in town a long time in Alaska, click on the link if you trust it, or go to another machine or on your phone and put in alaskasurveyresearch.com and you'll see that it's real. Things like that. I mean, you can generally learn how to tell when something is fishy, but some people are hard to convince.
Mm. Jason. Tips for how people can discern what's good and what they should stay away from?
I want to encourage people to take polls. But yeah, there's definitely some fishy ones out there. And I think people have pretty good intuition for what, as they start taking a survey, if they think the questions are biased or leaning in one direction. We usually ask at the end of our surveys, do you think this poll was written by a Democrat or Republican or a researcher? And we ourselves will use that to kind of hold ourselves accountable to writing a poll that was not biased and is believable, because we want our survey takers also to not be biased either way by worrying about who what is our agenda as the people who wrote this poll.
Let's talk a little bit about Matt. You'd mentioned that you ran focus groups and polled Alaskans. You mentioned that you were involved in the Constitutional Convention vote and polled folks about that. How do you use information that's in the crosstabs? And then I'd like our pollsters to talk about what methodology they use and what people should understand about that. So tell us about crosstabs, what
sure.
you're learning there.
You know, I think it's important, you know, if you were the member of the public and you were to get a poll today, a stack of paper, you know, sent to you that says, hey, please review our full poll, would you know what you're looking at? And it's a very fascinating, from the first time you look at it to now years later for myself and having been part of many, many polls. Some of the things that I immediately look towards, again, sample size, who conducted it, those sort of things. But when you go down to the very end, there are what's crosstabs, and crosstabs can look different in different ways, but it's essentially a data breakdown by sort of demographic, by issue. So if you were to ask a question, the basic question we may have heard today, which is, if the election were held tomorrow, who would you vote for president? And, you know, it would say Donald Trump, Joe Biden, undecided, or a third party candidate, maybe have your say. You would go down and you look into the crosstabs and you would say, oh, we see that women and maybe women under 30 have I should have used hypotheticals, but women under 30 may have an issue with said candidate, or men, blue collar men really like this candidate, or college educated like this candidate. And so it's a very easy, informative way for us to look at the data and see how specifically it applies to these different groups. Some of the other things that you can see is, when we're looking at polling, there's a lot of questions that we don't talk about. Like, I really love seeing what we call verbatim questions. You know, you ask them an open-ended question and you record their answer. Mm-hmm. Super informative. Now, it's less analytical and more anecdotal, but it's super helpful to see what people have said about you. More in addition, there's questions like seen, read, heard. You know, when you're spending money, what's the last thing you've seen, read, or heard about this topic? Mm-hmm. Super helpful as well. But again, back to the questions on crosstabs, it really is your way of breaking down the information in a segmented way and of being able to extrapolate the information on a subset of groups, individuals, or issues to help you better understand, because you can look at the big picture and it tells you one story, but when you really look closely and you break it down, it may tell you another story. Sure. And it is very helpful to making informed decisions.
Yeah, sounds like a minutia that's really interesting for you to really drill down and figure out the various sentiments among demographics. So in our final couple of minutes here, Ivan and Jason, talk to us about the methodology and what that means when you talk about how you're building polls and what you're using to.
Well, as already been commented, part of it is building an impartial and fair questionnaire, which gets you the data you want. Information that you want. And then, as I said earlier, it's a matter of the tricky business of randomly selecting people. But fortunately, we're in a situation here in Alaska where there's a fairly finite set of cell phone numbers. And so you can work with the universe of those and find out which ones are active and then text them. Mm-hmm. Here's the dirty secret, though, is that response rates in the polling business, starting in the 70s, started to decline, and they never really stopped declining. And it's gotten down to the point where only a small minority of people who are reached actually participate in the surveys. Now, there's two schools of thought about response rate. One is that you've got to work as hard as you can to raise your response rate up as high as possible, because that reduces your propensity for bias in the data. And the other school of thought says, don't worry about low response rates, just record demographics and then weight the data to make it look like a representative Alaska sample. And that means weighting by gender, weighting by racial ethnicity, weighting by education level, weighting by party affiliation, and more importantly, by whether they're a Trump voter or a Biden voter. Because if you did any survey of Alaska and you believed what the raw numbers said, you would think that Biden had won by 10 or 15 points, because Trump has conditioned his followers to not trust polls and not participate in them. They don't all not participate, but they participate to less of a degree. So there's a bias away from them, and you have to fix that.
Yeah, in general, we see that Alaskan voters are pragmatic and not dogmatic, and they put their communities first. And that's reflected in that more than any other state, voters are not registered to either the Democrat or Republican Party. And And if, even if you pull a topic like Gaza, like we found that by the 57% of Alaskans support the U.S. calling for a permanent ceasefire and de-escalation of violence in Gaza. And we can break that down by, for example, independence also by a 27% point margin, follow that. And the protests are really helpful for seeing that furthermore, like women are 39 points more likely to call for someone that support that ceasefire compared to men who are about neutral.
My last question before we got to jump out the door here is, how much influence do the people that commission the polls have on how the questions are shaped or framed? Like, Matt, if you were going to commission a poll, do you have a lot of say in how the questions get asked?
I think that we've come into a pollster and said, this is what we're looking to ask. We typically, the pollster typically will write the question based on our interviews and our conversations with them. I will say there's times where we've had pollsters say, we can't use language that will push one person one way or the other. So there is a science, but there's also an art to writing poll questions, I would say.
All right.
I think the goal is to not be biased, though, and not to push people one direction.
Well, that's a great way to end up here. Thank you so much to my guest today, Ivan Moore, owner of Alaska Survey Research, Matt Shukaro, the owner of Fathom Strategic Communications, and Jason Katz-Brown, a senior analyst for Data for Progress. Thanks to our engineer, Chris Hyde, our producer, Madeline Rose, and on the phones, Ava White helped us out today. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. I'm Lori Townsend.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.